Hello there. For the last couple of episodes, we've been looking at components that make up a website. In doing that, we are building a library that we can refer to, particularly for the next time we build demo websites on the show. This could be considered a part of a design system, but apart from knowing this is a hot topic, we're not sure what a design system is. To try and unpack this, we're delighted to be joined once again by our friend Paul Lacey. He, unlike us, has actually managed to put some form of design system together for his own work. So apart from my usual hello to David Wormsley, hello, David Wormsley.
Hello.
I'm going to also say, yeah, thank you. I'm also going to say hello to Paul Lacey. Lovely. <Hello. laughs> Now that we've got the introductions out of the way, Paul, just a second, because our listeners, if they haven't heard a previous episode, they won't know who you are. So I'm going to put you on the spot. Give us your potted bio quickly, if that's all right.
Well, you're correct to first of all say I've done some form of a system, so I'm glad you said that. Also, I'm not a full-on expert in this. I'm much like yourselves, just knowing about it and aware that I'm doing some aspects of it, interested how I can improve it myself, and looking to see where things are going. And I know David does a lot more probably academic study of this sort of thing, because when we talk, I know he's read books on it, which I haven't. And so what I am, I'm a web designer developer, probably started around 1999, I think it was. And so I've seen a lot of change from the, you know, using non-breakable spaces for design for instead of CSS. So when I started, there wasn't really any CSS right at the beginning. There probably was, but we weren't using it at the beginning. Then CSS comes in, and then the dot-com boom and bust and all that sort of stuff. And then I think we're still recovering from that now, just in terms of how the whole Western world seems to think what web design is or should be. And I think this whole design system thing is cool because it's sort of lays down some rules that if everybody got on board and followed it, it would make for much better websites, I think. But where we are, I think, these days is that certain level of organizations are good at dealing, you know, implementing these things and running them because everybody's on board. And then as you kind of go down and organizations get smaller, you get to a point where the web designers are on board with these sort of things, but perhaps not everybody else is. So like, it's a real challenge to sort of figure out how you can have these systems in your mind and use them. But there are lots of factors that can derail these sort of things. So I'm hoping that we might get to the bottom of some of that today. We might not even get as far as defining what all this stuff is, but we'll see.
Yeah, indeed. So as is always the case, David has put together some show notes, which I'll share on the screen, but you can find them. Ooh, that didn't work out so well. There we go. You can find them at noscript.show and then / the number 2222. So noscript.show / 22. Shall we pop that on the screen, David, and crack on? And I'll hand the baton over to you at this point, I think.
Yeah, well, it's only basic, though, so we can try and get some definitions, because honestly, you say I read some books on this stuff. When I read articles and I hear terms like design systems used in different contexts, I don't know what people are meaning by it. There's other things like design tokens. I don't know what that means, and there's different definitions out there. So I thought it'd be good to chat, because Paul and I have had some conversations before, because it's kind of the holy grail to try and find some way, particularly if you're just working on your own, to efficiently create your own websites. And back in our WordPress days, you know, we've always tried to get some starter website. Anyway, let's go. I put a couple of definitions up there, which maybe, Nathan, you'll need to read, because I'm on a very small screen and I can't read what I've written.
That's absolutely fine. Yeah, so again, I'm reading off the screen, noscript.show/22, and the headline for that is, Are Design Systems Worth It? And so we're going to begin by asking the question, what do we mean by design systems? There's a couple of quotes, which I'll just read out. The first one says, a design system is a complete set of standards intended to manage design at scale using reusable components and patterns. And that's the Norman Nielsen or Nielsen Norman, I can never remember, group. And then a source from Figma, the design tool, a design system is a single source of truth that reduces design redundancy and accelerates the development process. So I guess they're broadly similar in a way. Do you want me to read the other bits about the who uses a design system, or should we dwell on the what do we mean first?
Yeah, I like these definitions. I don't know about you, Paul, because they're pretty vague. So under this definition, I guess, you know, what you've been doing with the page builder that you've used, you've created this whole system to be able to put together websites through these kind of row templates, haven't you? So mm-hmm. you can kind yeah. of do that. And there's nothing there that would say that's not a design system, I don't think. And you could argue even what we're trying to do at the moment, which is, well, it's interesting because our series that we've done before, I kind of was model it on the idea of what you did, Paul, in a way, was thinking, okay, what I want to do is to have not necessarily row templates because I'm working much more with grid. And so, you know, my page layouts might be different, but the fact that I thought I needed something so I could grab this bit here and have a header here, a footer here, a middle section, some accordions and stuff like that. As I've gone on, you kind of realize that for us that a component ends up being an examination of what the HTML and CSS options are when you're constructing something. It doesn't turn out to be something I can easily drag and drop in.
So does that, when you say that, so obviously rows, we understand what that is. That usually represents from the left to the right of the screen, and it's a horizontal block of stuff. But mm-hmm. a component is the bits, if you like, that might sit within inside that. But are you saying then that the components, when you really get to it and you do this work over and over again, you realize that even that sort of definition and clarification doesn't work? Because it might be that you want to take out a little bit within that component itself. And so really what you're forcing yourself to do is forget how it looks, forget the bit that you could drag and drop onto the canvas, for want of a better word. You're saying, worry about the actual code that makes that up. That's the component, the HTML.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we started our series trying to do the accordion, and straight away we realized that where the accordion is used and what we expected to do. So you'd have to have a whole series of them. So in terms of us getting some sort of design system was really we're kind of putting together something as part of our series, which ends up being nothing more than a few sort of bullet points about how this will work for accessibility, when this is appropriate to use and not. That is more useful than the drag and drop component itself, you know? So it's been quite interesting, our own attempt to build a design system, which gets more knotty the more you get into it. But anyway, sorry.
I'm gonna keep this going if you don't mind, because I think this is interesting. Because the word design, by definition, I think is the use of the eye, at least in my head. I'm imagining what I can see more than anything else, as in what is put on the screen. And obviously, you've got tools like Figma. That's their bread and butter, isn't it? Is what you see is the whole point of that tool, is to create things that you can send to people and you can see it. But what you're saying is that for you, that definition, you've got to atomize it a little bit further and go into the code, because it might be that, okay, there is an accordion. Well, you can see that, that's fine. But because of the various different ways you could use an accordion, it might not look the same each time. And so design system already, we've come up against some tripwires, because I'm thinking that's what you look at. And that doesn't sort of live up to the definition you've just described of code. So that's interesting, I think.
Yeah, it's quite interesting. If you look at the design systems, well-known design systems that are out there, like there is the Material Design System by Google. There is this Nord Health. They have a big design system, which is perhaps more about the look of things that you might bring in. But then when you start to look at, I think, interestingly, there's been a move. If you look at there's design systems as well for the UK government, you know, so there's one that will go with gov.uk, and there's now the same with US as well. And when you look at those, there's elements about their own, but they're very simple. You know, their public sites have to be design-wise quite simplistic. But when you look at it, it's often seems to be a lot more about the rules about how to make this particular thing accessible, you know. It'll be, and it gets much more closer to the component of the design system, if you like, is really the raw HTML, you know, okay. more often than not.
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense. Paul, do you want to do any more on that before we move on to the next section?
Yeah, sure. The definitions, I much prefer the NNG one with a complete set of standards intended to manage design at scale using reusable components and patterns. just because it just gels with me a little bit better. I would, like, personally, in my life, I would remove the word complete and it would be a set of standards. Because it has the word intended, I like that, because it's saying that we're trying to do this rather than the other definition from Figma. I think that will definitely vibe well with UX and UI designers who use that Figma product. I think, you know, this whole concept of the single source of truth that reduces design redundancy, accelerates development of process, etc. I just what comes to mind with all this sort of stuff is that the whole concept of design system can turn a lot of people off immediately, because it immediately sounds technical and immediately sounds like exclusionary to people who don't know what you're talking about as such. So I'm thinking, when you take any of the companies that we might have mentioned, anyone who's not a designer or developer and not thinking about the HTML or these, you know, global colors or variables and stuff like that, it's like, are we even part of this conversation? So if you kind of take the end user audience, how can someone in the audience or the audience of a website contribute to a conversation and feedback on the design system and how well it's been used? How can HR feedback on that? How can CEOs feedback on that sort of thing? So I quite like the NNG one because it's more open. Also, I know we don't have it up on the screen, but looking at a couple of those design systems, David, that you highlighted, I really do like the GovUK, the UK government design system. Because it's accommodated everybody that needs to understand it. It's given the code, it gives you the code snippets and it shows you what you should be doing on that level. But the way it communicates about its design system patterns or components is in sort of human language. So whereas the three of us might talk about, right, we need a design system for an accordion. Like, what's the point of the accordion? Whereas the UK government website tends to say things like, here is a design system for when you need to get somebody's credit card details for them to pay a bill. And then so it gives you the kind of point of why you would even care about this. And so then the finance department is saying, oh, this sounds good. So we've got a more efficient way to get the money from people who owe the money. Or we also have included in that design system a way for them to present to the user what to do if they have a problem paying this bill. And so everybody's benefiting. The different departments are understanding what the point is for them. Like, what's in it for me in the finance department to care about this design system that Dan from head of design was going on about in that meeting that I was falling asleep in? So I really like that, because this is maybe why, you know, if you struggled to get started yourselves, it might be because what might be easier for me is because I don't have to worry about the HTML too much, because I've essentially made a decision to not care about it as much, which I know somebody might listen to this and be like, what the heck? You know, what kind of professional are you? But essentially, I'm living in a world where I need to use WordPress themes and WordPress page builders, and a bunch of those decisions are taken away from me. So I'm straight into the point where I'm thinking about, I've got a decision. I've got two options at this point. I can go straight into thinking about the elements that I want. So do I want kind of a row, let's say, with a call to action in it and those sort of things? Or do I go into purpose-led thinking, which is what I've been trying to do more recently? Essentially, it's the same stuff, but the purpose, again, of a pricing table. So you start with the purpose, and it is to present the options and recommend an option to a user. So how do we present the options of our product and recommend which one is probably right for them. And if we think about it from that angle, then we've included into our design system the point of the element or the pattern or the component. And then we work backwards from that. And then eventually you can take that rationale of why you need this component, and you can stop at the point that's comfortable. For me, I stop at the point where I'm dragging these elements in and designing them in Beaver Builder. Whereas if you want, you can go further back and ditch that aspect and then go, right, we know the point of it. We know what the users want. So now we know what HTML tags we might need, as opposed to just looking at some other, I'm not saying you do this, but, you know, looking at some pricing tables and seeing what elements appear to be there and then coding those up. So you've always got, like, the government, UK government website has, you've always got this design component, or this component or pattern can be measured as failing or succeeding because there is a mission for it as such. So I don't know if any of that made sense, but that's where the two strict ones, like the Figma one, to me I'm reading it and thinking that this is less inclusive as the one above it from NNG, because the NNG one is talking about it's managing design at scale, it's reusing components and patterns, and it's intending to improve that process rather than be a kind of elitist sort of set of Figma documents that nobody else understands. And if you don't know, and if you come in as a designer to our team and you don't know what this is, gosh, what's wrong with you?
Can I try to just encapsulate what you've just said, I think, sentence? No, but in order to just clarify in my head.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I think what you just said then would be something like this. So we'd have a Paul Lacy quote on that page, and it would say something like, a design system is a text description of design, of the purpose of design elements, visual design elements, which are reusable, scalable components and what have you. So it's got that kind of description bit in text as the focus, like the gov.uk one that you were describing. And and because you've described its purpose, you've kind of made it more accessible to people who don't have a background in graphic design, for want of a better word, because you've explained what its point is on the page. Is that about right?
Yeah, I mean, it means that you could have a conversation with the finance department that informs how you should make these components and patterns that fit into your design system. Like, further down this document is probably some stuff about the ingredients of a design system. Like, the finance department doesn't need to contribute too much about the brand colors. In fact, they don't need to contribute about that at all. And they probably don't need to... I forget what it's called. There's the components, the patterns, there's the really little things. They're like the variables. What are those called?
Tokens.
Tokens. So that stuff is, to me, for the brand and the design team to know that, you know, green means go, red means stop, amber might mean think about it, blue means information. You know, they might make those sort of decisions based on the brand. The actual HTML elements the HTML feels that it's more of a human conversation with the stakeholders, and then the brand element is more of an internal design creative side of things. But yeah, I think Nathan, what you more or less said is probably a better definition just for me, because I have to have conversations with clients all the time, and I have to try and justify why I've done something. And I can't just say because Figma told me to, based on their amazing design system as such. No offense to Figma. They know exactly what they're doing. But to make it communicatable to who the people I'm trying to convince to not have a slider.
David, should we move on, or have you got things
We can actually, because we can widen it up, I think, once we've covered some of the points we put down here. So we just quickly, I mean, who uses a design system? So, I mean, there's two different types in that sense. There is the large sites that need consistency as they keep changing their website, regardless of who's employed at the time. So they need some set of rules, if you like, about how the styling and the content is added to a particular site. So at site, and then we've got the what people like us, maybe were solo designers or maybe small groups and that, who want quick ways to assemble websites and might use a design system like that. And that's where you might, you know, borrow something that's already existing out there, like Nord or like the material design or something from Google as a starting point. Or effectively, even as a lot of us do, we use a, it's not exactly a design system, but effectively it gets close to it. Something like Bootstrap becomes a design system. Tailwind, you know, they become, even though they're sort of CSS based, they become a sort of design system we can borrow. And then, of course, well, and then the big question about design systems, and that's why you see a lot of debates about, you know, you don't need a design system, you're wasting your time with it. And those people who say you absolutely do need a design system. And I think this is where you hear all these different conversations because everybody has a different idea about what that might mean to them. So you kind of, you know, if you invest too much, you can invest, as I've done before, invested a lot of time trying to copy Paul and what he managed to do with his beaver builder.
I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. It will have led to nowhere.
No, but I was trying to do the same thing when we were both using the same page builder.
Yeah.
And I was trying to do the same thing as you, and you actually managed to get something that was useful, that worked for the jobs mm-hmm. that you needed to do. Mm-hmm. I was envious of that. When I started doing something in a similar way, I got myself so caught up in sort of little elements. And the same thing has exactly happened in this series as well, when you get into components, that I talk myself out of ever getting the system that works. But I mean, maybe one day I'll get there and it'll be very thorough and it will work for me. But it's quite interesting. So I'm definitely in that, got to invest in the right thing for the job that I'm doing. I think mm-hmm. you've balanced that right. And that's kind of why this interests me, how to do it for us. Anyway, sorry, I'm going off a bit there.
That's okay. No, that's fine. So this is the section, who uses a design system. Have we kind of finished on that one?
There's something interesting on that. I just would say, like, the large sites that need consistency, regardless of who's working on them. This reminds me of my old company that imploded Digibirds. this is why you should listen to me. Such success. But it reminds me because myself and my business partner both had different roles. We were working with totally different clients. So my business partner, Piotr, was working with a major car manufacturer, one of the biggest ones in the world. And that was like probably our biggest client technically. And that was pretty much all he did, apart from a few other bits where he would contribute to some of the work I was doing. And I was working with SMEs and charities. And so we would argue, actually, when we collaborated on my projects, because his mindset was way more long-term than mine. And I would be asking things of him that were borderline offensive to the way that he was learned to work, working as kind of part of a team at Nissan, because essentially he became integrated in the team and was leading UXs and UIs and stuff like that. So there was a lot of separation in these things. There was a lot of rules, and you couldn't break the rules, because if you did, you would be someone would hold you to account. And it's interesting because you got those two first ones, large sites that need consistency. So we could say large companies or brands, and then solo designers who want to assemble websites quickly. But it's the lifespan of the design system for the large brand is basically infinite. It changes, but there's always a design system that is being used every single day. Whereas the web designers who are doing a client job, they might have a design system that's a lot looser than that. And they bring that design system into the job. They do the job, and then the design system essentially semi-retires, and the designer hopes that if the client goes off with that website, that they carry on and try to make use of the systems that were put in place there. In most scenarios, they possibly don't, and that's why you have websites that launch and then they just degrade over time and become stale, and they lose the initial effectiveness that they might have had on day one. And so there's a lifespan that goes with these design systems that is very short with web designers. They have a drop-in design system that doesn't use all the ingredients, but it helps them get the job done effectively and quickly. Then it's gone. and the website just lives there. But with these big companies, the design system is part of every single decision, and nothing goes on the website unless it passes the design system. So it's just, we would argue, because I would say things like, I need a design for this by Friday, and it might be Tuesday already. And he would be like, so what do you want? Do you want, are you going to give the UX to the client first? I was like, no, we just need to give them the design. He'd be saying, we're skipping the stage. And I'd be saying, we're not skipping the stage. What we need to do is internalize that stage with our experience and just get it done. And we need to use our experience to get the UX done. And he would say, no, we need to do the UX and get sign off on that before we're doing any design. And I would be saying, we will get fired. So it just is the kind of the friction, and just like none of us were wrong in this. We were just living in different environment, and he was right actually, but I was looking after the well-being of a company surviving in a world that doesn't appreciate design systems. So
should okay. we move?
Yeah, let's move on.
Yeah, the next section. Well, largely, I've taken the main bullet points actually from an article that I've linked to, which is the Nielsen Norman Group one. So it's basically their 101 on what is a design system. I did add something extra to this, which is design tokens, which is a term that's bandied about. But what makes up a design system? So largely, it's got style guides, design tokens. You could argue that they overlap with each other, component libraries, and maybe pattern libraries. That might be one way of breaking these things up. Does that sound right to you, Paul?
Yeah. Do you know what? I didn't even know what design tokens was until I saw this a few days ago. So I had to. I understand what it is now. It's kind of almost the technical layer between the brand guidelines or the style guide. So it could be like a CSS variable that is saying, let's say, a success variable. And that might be that the style guide informs that to be a green color highlighting. So am I right about that? It's kind of the...
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it depends. I think the term comes from, I believe, Salesforce and their own design system. And there's a particular, I think the name is Gina, and I've forgotten her name, who's really... champion that, and she would very much see those as separate to a CSS variable, where other people might see it as akin to the same thing. She would see it as, do you know what, can I step back and just talk about why I think this is interesting, or why it gets confusing? Because I would think 2014 was such a significant year for revitalizing the idea of getting, so you've got this whole bunch of people. You had Brad Frost's Atomic Design, which we talked about on the show, didn't we, Nathan, before, which is, you know, a way of thinking about how you kind of build up a website out of Lego blocks, you know. And at the same time, you had React's JavaScript component library appearing. So you've got that whole
way. Which you love, your favorite.
Yeah, but these two things, I mean, without a doubt, they influence the future of things like Gutenberg for, you know, WordPress. It was only the next year when, you know, Matt Mullenweg was talking about, you know, blocks and the idea that JavaScript was the future. So you've got that. At the same time, it was about the same year where you've also got this contrary thing going with, I think, gov.uk. It was the year that they won the only design award, national design award for a website before, for going almost a completely opposite way with their own kind of design system. So I think a lot of when we talk about it, we have different ideas. So people think it's made up of, you know, we're thinking of React. When we talk about components, people think of React, even though there's web components which predate it. So there are, I think that's where a lot of our, you know, disagreements on what we think that is. But yeah, design tokens is a word that I kind of hate using, because in a way I don't know what I mean by it. I think that they would see it as one of Brad Frost's smaller atoms that make up a section of a website. So, but style guides, and this is where I think we mix things up, because I think style guides is something that could stay, couldn't it, for a company for all time. When you try to realize those style guides, that's fine. They can be turned into CSS that you go by. But when it comes to the, there's a gap in here, I think, when it comes to the rest of the design, because you either take the view that you're making up with Lego blocks these components, but then you're failing to see the design as a whole, if you work that way. And it's the same when you build pattern libraries. You know, it's making an assumption that that pattern will remain true for all time, where I think we already know technically this is very difficult, as we see CSS particularly changing at the moment. I mean, the design system that I was working on, that you're working on, is based around the fact that the only layout system we had for the web was Flexbox. Now we have Grid, it kind of throws that out. Now we have container queries that throws it out. Soon we are about to get into more things with if statements, where we might be able to program in all sorts of different types of arrangements for our website. So I do think, you know, if you try to invest in a design system at the very technical level, it's very difficult at this time. You could waste a lot of time. But style guides maybe are something that can remain in a company, as you always use this particular color for your, you know, your links and for your header and your footer or whatever.
I'll just point out that if you go to noscript.show/22, there's a couple of links on the what makes up a design system section. One of them links out to the Norman Nielsen group as an article called Design Systems versus Style Guides. And the other one heads off to Figma, well, docs.token.studio, tokens studio for Figma. So there's a couple of links provided by David there if you want to explore further.
Yeah.
Okay, should we move on to the next bit? How do we get a design system? All right. Okay. Three options: off the shelf, adapted from other sources, or custom. I'm guessing off the shelf is what most people are going to use.
Yeah, I guess so. Well, I don't know. We've always tried to build, and in effect, I mean, what Paul's done and what I've always been trying to do as well at the same time was always it to some degree off the shelf, in the sense that we're held to the platform that we, you know, using there. So we've got some restrictions that come with that. I do think it's interesting though, with things that change, I think when you get something off the shelf, you're trusting that company. So when you look at, I mean, there's been some huge errors with material design. I mean, they totally broke the web's accessibility with forms. They decided that placeholders were the great thing to do, and you can remove your titles from your form. So, you know, making forms terrible for ages. Same with Bootstrap. It decided Bootstrap, I think, 4 or something, it decided that they were unsightly to underline our links, effectively breaking the site for whole, you know, breaking the web for a whole bunch of people. So I do think, you know, there is an issue when you look for off the shelf. Where can you, particularly as things change, particularly as we become more aware of getting back to the basis of the web, making sure that it is truly inclusive, that it does look at accessibility. This is something that I think has grown. It wasn't there so much back in 2014, when I think we had this resurgence of the idea that we could have great design systems. So I think now getting something off the shelf would be quite tricky unless you know it was something. I would get great ideas from the UK Gov site or Gov UK site, because you know that they've learned the lesson that they need to make sure that what they put there serves everybody.
So are you a bit more, so there's 3 bullet points there. Again, this is for people listening to it. Off the shelf, adapted from other sources, and customs. David, is your plan to do a bit of 2 in the hope of getting to 3? So you're adapting from other sources, but doing it in a custom way. So
it'll be interesting to see what we build up, if we actually end up with a design system, because we're doing this series where we're looking at different bits of websites, effectively. Well, I mean, we started with the word components, but it's bits and bobs of websites that we're talking about. I mean, next time we're going to be talking about the head as a component, something you don't see even on a website. But I see it as a component because there are certain rules about how you might construct your head in your document. So I would, so I'm kind of going there. Whether that turns into a design system, it sort of is already for me, because of the fact that I'm saying, okay, I've got little notes in my, well, 11T at the moment, but it could be equally in a WordPress version of the same thing, little notes in this section where I put my head code and where I put certain things. So there is a sort of design system building up, but yeah.
Anything to add there, Paul?
Yeah, so the off-the-shelf is probably, like David said, always a little bit tricky because off-the-shelf is normally a digital product type thing or something to that effect that is trying to help you get from A to B super quick. And it has to promise certain things that make sense to the person who is trying to cut some corners to get somewhere quickly. So I think that's when, you know, we've all lived in the WordPress world for quite a while, and we're aware of the amount of templates you can buy or get for free for different page layouts, row layouts, that sort of thing. However, I think that most of the three of us have been exposed to all of those, bought a bunch of them, use the free ones, and then we still end up building websites with our own layouts. And we perhaps just look at those for design inspiration sometimes. I think, mm-hmm. Oh, that's quite nice, but I'm not going to actually use that row because it's got this problem, or it's not really, it looks completely different than the rest of my rows, but I'll take some ideas from that. And so I think that's one of the problems with design systems off the shelf, is not all of them, but they can suffer from having an agenda that is based around them getting sold as opposed to a long-term solving the problem. Nothing wrong with that. It's, you know, they do some good, but I just think that's why so many of them just don't succeed perhaps. I know when you look at a lot of the template packs within WordPress, their agenda has to be bling. They have to appeal to the person who can't design, let's say, who needs to look like they can. And we'll be like, oh, that looks cool. I'll just grab that row. And that's why you see some absolutely horrendous websites that look like, do you know those kids' toys where you match the different head, body, clothes, and, you know, you can put like put a skirt at the bottom and then like a top hat at the top. So you get this kind of thing that the somebody just doesn't realize is a complete Frankenstein website. So me, I'm probably doing custom but using a system that locks me into how I have to use it, but I'm probably essentially trying to create my own ones that work for me. So I'm, you know, eating my own dog food, I think is it, or whatever, but creating systems that work for me and then distributing them to a few other people. But I'm totally taking influence from other things that I see. So, for instance, within the WordPress space, I think one that does quite well is, I think there's a theme called Ollie. Is it Ollie?
That's right, Ollie. That's right, yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, they've had to work very hard to try to reduce. I assume what they're trying to do is they've got a product, and the big challenge they've got is that the system that their website is built on is the Gutenberg block editor, which has tons of cognitive dissonance for end users. So people go into it hearing all the hype and then they bounce off and then they go straight back to Elementor or something like that. So Ollie has had to work, and the team there have had to work very hard to try to onboard customers who then they hope will find this totally usable, make sense, because the UX is very good in the templates that they provide. The onboarding is very good. And so they're trying to create like a good experience to stop people from bouncing back to Elementor. So when you look at their templates, you can see that they've put a lot of thought into it to try and stop people from failing at the first hurdle, compared to templates that you'll see elsewhere. So yeah, just for information of what it is that when you mentioned I'm creating things, there's a number of systems that I've been creating. They definitely wouldn't tick all the boxes of the hardcore elite design system gurus. They will be problematic in all sorts of ways. But there's probably three different levels of that I've been doing. The one that I'm doing at the moment is for Beaver Builder. Mm. And it's because Beaver Builder has the ability to have global colors and variables and stuff like that now. So I can now build a kind of wireframe type set that is built around purposes, like I said, on the government website. So the purpose of this row or this page is to achieve this, and that page will have patterns in it, and then it will have components in it, that are all reusable, and they are feeding their style from the style guide, for instance. But mostly it's pattern libraries, I would say, and the component libraries are just natural to me to put into those. So that's one thing. That's my favorite one, because I really feel that will be super useful to me to use, so I know it'll be useful to other people. The other one is commercially out there, not to buy, but it's for an agency who do a lot of websites within the kitchen and bathroom design industry. So I created a design system, or you could call it a starter website. Essentially, it could be called a design system. And that means that they internally no longer have to come to me every time they want to launch a website. I just deploy the system, and I've trained people who are not web developers and designers to build websites. And they are building, whenever they've tried to do it before this, they were building Frankenstein websites that they thought looked fantastic and their clients loved too, because they were letting their clients tell them what to do and everyone was happy and they got paid. But the customers weren't buying for the kitchens. Now they're making websites that look really cool and have a following all of the templates and are based on all the things that we learned for the last 4 years developing kitchen websites, kitchen design company websites. And they're able to deploy these websites in a couple of days. And now they're design systeming their content as well, if that's possible. So because they know now, okay, when we have a page that has a showroom, is about the showroom, we have two things. We have a company that has one showroom, or we have a client that has multiple showrooms. This is how we deal with a company that has multiple showrooms. This is how we deal with a company that only has one showroom. So that'll then mean that when they have multiple showrooms, there'll be a choice page, which showroom do you want to go to? And then that will lead to the page, which is this is a showroom page, which tends to be all about telling a story of how beautiful your experience is going to be when you come in and have a coffee with us and sit down and have a look and try out the different appliances and blah, blah, blah. So that's the second one. And the third one is a template set that is based on a content copywriting framework. I won't say which one it is because I'll probably get in trouble. But it's loosely based on a copywriting framework. That basically is another ingredient to these design systems. So you've got the end use, then you've got where does the words come from, and then you've got the design aspect. So I've kind of mixed it up, and I don't have one yet that is all three of these things, but that's where I'd like to work to at some point. But I think that's why, if you really want a good design system, you know, perhaps you start off the shelf for your inspiration and then start creating your custom one that is adapted from the things that you're learning. Maybe that's the right way to do it. Because if it doesn't work, it's going to be a total waste of time for everybody.
There's a bit of all three there, isn't it?
Yeah.
You see, it's really interesting what you're talking about. The thing you didn't mention is that story brand.
Yeah, that's the word I was trying not to mention. Because I think if you use story brand, you are supposed to pay a license to story brand. So okay. I don't think it was that one, David, actually. I think it was something probably similar to story brand. But it was, I built a system that uses an idea similar to story brand. Which is based loosely also on the what is it called, the pain agitation solution system. Define the pain that the customer is feeling, why they would want their product, agitate that a little bit. What is the problem that will happen to them if they don't do something about this? This doesn't have to be a negative thing. It can be that you're missing out on the amazing thing. That can be the agitation. And then the solution is you present the thing that you offer that turns them from the loser that they are if they don't go with your product to the absolute hero that they will be if they buy it. And then you provide evidence of other people who were losers before they chose your amazing product and are now massive heroes, sort of thing. So I think some of the technical design systems are design and code focused. And then when the rubber hits the road, you have end users and you have how should we communicate to those end users. And that's why I think like a design system needs to be a bit looser and include end user goals, business goals, and a copywriting direction. You know, what's the consistent tone of voice that you're going to have throughout this? And with StoryBrand, for instance, it's always about making the end user feel like the hero. So if you say, right, we're using StoryBrand, this design system, and here are our end user goals, then everyone can get on board who's involved. You can even communicate it to a client. I've found things like using StoryBrand or Pain Agitation Solution super useful when I'm going into a Zoom meeting with five different stakeholders from a company who're all going to have opinions, but I frame the whole meeting around, right, let's just do it like this. And then they all love it because they can all contribute to that, and they can contribute to how we make the user feel like a hero. They can all contribute to how we identify the pain that the user has got or the customer's got before they buy the product. And it really helps get people on board. And then when I show them a wireframe or a design using a secret design system that I've got for them, they see what they said reflected in the design rather than that, you know, if five people are all disagreeing, when you show those five people the design, they're all going to disagree on the design because they didn't see, each of them saw the thing that they disagreed about in there. So I don't know where I was going with that, but essentially it was the, I think you've got to have an inclusive design system. Otherwise, you're not going to get buy-in from the stakeholders that will need to sign off on it and make it work.
Okie doke. I think that was a full investigation of that part, wasn't it? So should we move on to the potential benefits, David? Ready for that?
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. Okay. So
I'll just jump in. I just thought that was quite interesting because that's not definitely what you're describing there is something that I think you kind of need this system, but it's not included in what the articles I look at say. What makes up a design system, and that, you know, a kind of copywriting system goes in your design system. It's all part and parcel of the same thing. Yeah.
Yeah. One of the ones that are built starts with that because a major problem for web designers and end user clients is tone of voice and how they communicate. So you could throw a load of cool elements at a page that have got a fantastic design system in there, but, you might just be doing that based on that you thought it looked cool. So if you use a system like StoryBrand, it tells you your top row should be your top line should be a unique value proposition. Your second line should outline in very brief bullet points the key benefits. The third row outlines the problem and possibly agitation in the same row. So you have this kind of, right, so I need to do a unique value proposition. What are my possible design patterns and components to do that? Yeah. And the obvious one is going to be like a hero banner, and then a design component of that is going to be a heading. But it shouldn't just say the name of the product. Like, the design system, in my opinion, should include the big heading isn't just a H1 HTML tag that's big. It is that HTML tag should have a point to it, which is to convince somebody, if they only read that one heading on the entire website before they decided to bounce or click forward, that it also told them the important thing. So to me, like, content and the end user goals is totally part of the design, but I don't see that included in a lot of the sort of more academic talking around design systems, because it's a design industry talking about it. So whereas I have to meet the rubber where it hits the road and deal with CEOs and opinionated marketing execs and cousins of the CEO or nephews and nieces and all that sort of stuff, and I have to try and keep them on track so that I don't retire from the project with an excuse of something came up because I've lost complete control. So I have to say, that's why I think bringing some of those elements would be really useful to design. I think the UK government does that to this extent with its the purpose of this one is this. They even give the content examples, you know, because especially for these more transactional sort of things, that you should say this and these are the words that you can say. I think it's fantastic.
Yeah. No, I think that's a fabulous site. And I think the US have pretty much adopted this kind of thing. My understanding is that the US kind of went more down the whole React route and it kind of lost money. I think there's a sort of sense that when you're losing billions, as they do, yeah, they've had to work in an agile way, and they have to work to these kind of more fundamental systems that, you know, start with a HTML first approach to everything, you know, in terms of the technicals.
Yeah. I think this just highlights, you know, just stay on that React thing just for a second. I think this is possibly what you think as well, but it's certainly what I think, is that as soon as the concept of web components became tied verbally to React or similar, so it's like, what JavaScript library do you use to create your web components? I was out of the conversation at that point. I was lost to it because I'm not really a JavaScript developer. But think how many other stakeholders downstream of a not very good JavaScript developer are now completely out of the conversation, of lost control. So it just kind of made this to me, this, and I think this is what W3C has identified, that as soon as this kind of culture of JavaScript libraries got mixed up with design systems, highly skilled web developers gatekeepers to decision making, and it seems that was the wrong way to do this.
Yeah, gone so high level really that you kind of lost it. And I think now, as we become more conscious of accessibility and getting back to that web, that it should serve all people. That's its unique selling point above all other mediums, is the fact that anyone with a computer then can adapt it and get the same information. It is truly inclusive. And that got lost when all your developers and all the people are thinking about JavaScript first. They skip over to, you know, then they find something to solve CSS, maybe Tailwind, that will plug in. That's a system that will work. And then, you know, the last thing they're learning then is HTML. And as we learn more, HTML doesn't cover us full accessibility. We need to learn a little bit of ARIA to get there. And I think that's where I like those kind of, let me say, with the UK ones, because they have to start from that basis of inclusivity. Yep. So it builds up on those foundations.
Yeah, their mix seems really well thought out and inclusionary, if that's a word.
It is now.
It is, yeah. It makes sense in my context of things.
Okay.
With the ARIA tags and the HTML, you know, like you say, the HTML tags that get you to 80%, and then the ARIA takes you over the line to truly define what this content is, as opposed to with the JavaScript route, which you sometimes can't even see the content behind the scenes. It's dynamically changing in the document.
Yes.
You know, and it's, yeah. Yeah, let's move on. Sorry.
Okay, no, that's fine. That's absolutely fine. So a couple of sections we've got left. So potential benefits and finally considerations. So potential benefits have been listed out as follows. I'll just read them out and then we can...
Yeah.
You can explore them. The potential benefits are as follows. Four things Dave has listed: efficiency and cost saving, reducing tedious tasks, maintaining quality or reducing errors, and finally, reducing staff dependency through documentation. I suppose they're all fairly self-explanatory, but do we want to open those up?
No, I think we'll go on to the considerations, which I think the next thing, there are benefits, obviously, if you can kind of have some sort of system that you, that's really what I feel like I'm trying to work out, is a way of avoiding errors. When you get into looking at everything I put on a website, I made the No Script Show one, and I'm going back on it, recorrecting things as I go through this series on components here, because I realize, oh, I forgot about this.
Oh,
you know, yeah. So it's getting built. So I think there's something to have some documentation, even for yourself, that reminds you when you do certain things, even if it is, as I say, what we'll do next time, a header, which you don't even see. Hey, one thing that did cross my mind with style guides and branding, I said earlier, and I think this is open for question now, a company might need something might stay there in terms of a style guide, and it might be a permanent thing. But I question this these days, because we are moving so rapidly towards this idea of users choosing their own journey on the web. You know, light and dark mode is the one that's taking off the most, that you, even that isn't so true these days. If we're moving forward with this idea that there are different presentations for different types of users, depending on their own preference of how they want to consume the web.
It sounded like it led into the first two points actually quite nicely. So,
Okay, so let's go through those then. So the considerations, first of all, long-term efficiency in an ever-changing industry. Second one, where design consistently stifles creativity. And finally, how do we build the right foundations? Again, because it's yours, both of you have significantly more experience. It's over to you.
Can I say something about these actually? So David, your approach is much more resilient to point number one, long-term efficiency in an ever-changing industry, where you are going as deep as the HTML code and the ARIA. So when this comes back to this whole lifespan of a design system, most of the systems I'm using, should all page builders suddenly disappear, at least I can take some of the thinking and then apply it to HTML, and I'll be one step behind you on the tech, but I can probably get there in time, given time, sort of thing. But this ever-changing industry, it's not even really the industry is like us, we're the people who make this stuff, right? But to me, I think the word industry could be interchangeable with I don't know what the word is actually, but so for instance, currently we use website in a browser, and that's how we look at it, or on a phone. And then content now can be fed into things like Apple Newsreader, those sort of things. So basically, some of the websites I would make would not fare well in some of these situations where content needs to adapt to a different device or something that isn't a web browser. Everything I'm doing is assumed that it's been consumed probably on a web browser or a mobile phone web browser.
Okay. Yeah.
Whereas I can totally see that, especially with AI, I know that this is a controversial topic as such, but if it gets to the point where you don't even really look at websites anymore, we spoke about this on the last one, I think, where you just say, hey, where basically websites are sort of made on the fly in some kind of, they're made in real time. So when you ask something about, hey, can you tell me about like, what's the best Fender guitar from the made in Japan in the 80s? ChatGPT will currently give you a kind of chat about that at the moment, but it's not inconceivable that at some point it will create a custom web page for you that you just look at as if that page had been made with pictures and videos and all that sort of stuff. But you would imagine it would need to be able to query its sources and see HTML tags, find ARIA attributes and stuff like that. And it would only really pull in that content where it was confident that it was the correct content because it could see how it was marked up. It's not going to go to, you know, one of my websites where a client has told me to put this over here and make this thing flying over there, and then like this pop-up comes up or something, because it's just too much chaos and noise for a future device to understand. So I think the Gov website is a perfect example again, because you can see that those elements could transfer into other devices that we don't yet know that people want to use. So you could equally, they could plug an API into ChatGPT, for instance, and have you pay your council tax straight via ChatGPT if you wanted to. And I think that's where we'll end up going, that different systems will just be plugging into things and APIs. So the current SME and charity and nonprofit sector is going to struggle with that, because we're all stuck in that sector, both the clients and the people serving it, like me, in this relatively short-term view of everybody wants to go to your website and a web browser, so make a website for a web browser. And when it becomes a problem, they'll ask me to make a system that works in ChatGPT so they can, you know, do you know what I mean? So, but we'll be playing catch-up massively at that point. And David, your approach of thinking about this HTML structure, you might not have the content that ChatGPT or whatever system wants to pull in, but at least you'll have the structure correct, that it can understand and interpret and know, oh, basically, here's some prices of those guitars that you want, and it will put it in a component pricing table, and it will know to recommend this guitar, and it will have a pricing table, right, that isn't even from a website. It's just gone like, well, there's this Mexican guitar, USA Fender, and then the Japanese one recommended with a little tag on it. You know, most popular for people who are thinking like you. And it's presented as a pricing table with benefits and stuff like that. So I think that's like, I think that we'll see. The ever-changing to me is that everything's going to be much more dynamic and on the fly, using components and patterns that are marked up well. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, we would probably, I mean, that's, I don't like the idea that that search engines are now providing the AI. I feel it's broken the deal with people, because at the end of the day, it's making us dependent on our content, stolen our content, basically. AI has stolen everybody's work and is remarketed to us. I don't know if it'll ever be able to... I think the more you get into the skill of writing a website, I've only become more appreciative of this recently, particularly as you get into the accessibility, because there isn't, a machine isn't going to quite do it, because it has to make, you have to kind of make decisions about how you will label your aria or where you will label it according to your imagined audience for the content and the different circumstances that they might be in. I find it hard to imagine that anything will automatically do that. We'll be able to present random content and get that right.
Not if Cloudflare has got anything to do with it.
Because Cloudflare is providing a system to block your website from AI bots, right?
Yeah, unless you pay. Yeah, it's like a paywall for AI systems. Yeah, to just sort of hot off the press.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, we can. I mean, if there is a set of rules, but I think this is always where we want to go with design systems. And it's even with AI. It's my thought on things at the moment. It's a very materialistic view of the world, where you think that everything can be explained if we get down to a certain set of materials that we understand. And you know, obviously, when we've got Geoffrey Hinton, the sort of godfather of AI, now panicking about general intelligence, you know. As a reality, I don't know if it ever will be. Obviously, it poses a threat to us, depending on how we use it. This is another conversation here.
But it's
in the same way that with the design systems. I think, you know, the idea that we're seeing certain things are making us feel like this is going to provide the solution, like we're not far away from Google, that it can now grab the information and it's really useful in that, and now it will be able to present it in a way. I just don't believe that's ever going to be the case, you know.
In the same way that in physics, there's always this rush to, well, there's always this idea that you'll get this grand unified theory. It feels a bit like that's what we're describing here, this grand unified theory of what the internet is and what design is. And maybe it'll never be a right.
It's always the problem, you know, for people like Geoffrey Hinton, all materialists who explain things. So they say, I can explain everything in science and this is how it works. And then you go, yeah, but, okay, so I explain the body. And you go, yeah, but why do I think? Why am I conscious? And they go, well, that's just a phenomenon. Don't worry about that. Forget that.
Worry.
We've solved it. The whole thing about having a consciousness is you know, irrelevant to this conversation. And I think sometimes that's how you get when you look at things scientifically, when it comes to the art of communication via the web. We start to think, well, it will serve the stuff, but will it really communicate with real human conscious beings? And I never quite convinced. I always think that it's just a bunch of scientists thinking they're going to nail this. There's a formula here.
We will we'll probably revisit this topic in 2 years' time when our robot overlords have taken over.
Yes.
And we will just be simulations because we've been scraped on the internet. Do you think we've achieved what we set out to achieve? Are we at the end of that episode, do you imagine? Or is there more to say?
I think we're still confused as ever.
Yeah. But that's never, that's never going to change.
Yeah. that's because we're normal people. But you know, that consistency stifles creativity down there.
Oh, yeah.
That's an interesting one to me, because I don't think consistency ever does stifle creativity. I think just, you know, mashing things up and throwing them all over a page isn't creativity. It's just, it's like a gaslighting version of creativity that an end user doesn't appreciate, but the owner of the website appreciates more. So it's where design consistency states creativity. I don't think it starts creativity. I think design consistency helps to get rid of vanity aspects nicely. You can still be totally creative. You shouldn't just be, you shouldn't fail to be creative if you've got consistency, you know?
So I like that. That sounds like a great meme.
Yeah,
we'll probably parcel that up as the bit that this episode goes out on. I will try to make that happen.
No, I think that's what you do quite well on it, because of the fact that you've got a design system where you've got kind of rows and they're spaced out in a logical way, because you're using a lot of your own CSS to make sure that the spacing is consistent through it.
Yeah.
And for users, there is a certain, if you understand how people perceive space and what they mean to them, this, you know, it drives us mad. And we can tell a bad design because they've used a page builder and just dropped something in and it's, you know, half a centimeter off or something how it was on the other page, and it's jarring. And we know this. And that kind of consistency helps us with our perception. But I think sometimes that consistency in a different way, a consistency of doing things in a certain way, then leads to, you know, as we can see with design, they, you know, we might have thought we got the perfect design in 2000 or something, and none of them look like that any longer, you know, unless we're doing it for comedic effect, you know. So we constantly change. So I think that's the problem with the design system. You build a whole load of layouts that you're going to use, and you just think these were just web layouts. Then they don't, you know, some, there's more interesting thing that you'll see in print and in other places.
Okay. I think I am going to knock it on the head in that case at that point. So that was episode number 22, or at least you can find it at noscript.show/22. You can head to the URL there, and hopefully you will be able to find the relevant show notes there. It only remains for me to say thank you to Paul for joining us today.
Thanks,
I appreciate
Paul.
Your contributions to the debate today. That's great. So we'll see you on the next
one. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, you're very welcome. See you soon.